papers on the issue of thanking God when something good happened to you. And does that mean that we are saying that God was directly involved in a personal kind of a way? That God rearranged the elements in nature just to bring about this result? Or are you obliged to say that? Or is it possible to say that this happened as a result of the natural order, or a person acted intelligently, fortuitously, and he was successful? And one doesn't have to account, resort to any higher providence. It simply is something which is explainable in the natural order. So the point that I made was that a person in most situations, unless he has some way of knowing for sure in the book, or he has an extremely advanced level of knowledge in the area, but a person really doesn't have any way of knowing. When something happens to him, is it the result of the natural order, or is it providence? Nevertheless, he should thank God. He always has to thank God for the good. And the reason for that is because when we thank God, we're not saying that God intervenes in the system to do something specifically for me. But we're thanking God in a broader sense. For any good that a person experiences, and the truth is that a person even has to thank God. And it's not even thanking. The proper term is moda, which is to acknowledge. And somebody mentioned Rabbi Hirsch, Shimshon Karl Hirsch, said that the term means to sort of admit or to confess, which is correct. The entire point of all of these obligations is to constantly bring before our minds the source, the reality. The reality is that we are enabled to experience the good, and that is not because of anything inherent within ourselves, because we're important, because we have any powers. That's not the truth. The truth is that we're really nothing. And we exist only because of the will of God. And God placed us in a situation and gave us the opportunity to experience this good. Now, the praise of God should not only be restricted to cases where we imagine that God did something, rearranged, and did something specifically for us. That's a childish notion of the Hashgacha. But the real Hashgacha of God is expressed in the laws of nature, in the system. If God set up in a tremendous system, and he gave us an opportunity to partake of the good by proper utilization of that system. That's the real orientation that a person should have. And therefore, when a person uses his God-given seichel, his wisdom, and he applies it to the situation, to utilizing the laws of nature, and as a result he's successful, of course you should give thanks to God. I mean, there's two possibilities. There's also the possibility that this is a situation where God actually assisted him to achieve his goal. But even if we should say that it wasn't on the level of the Ashkacha, he still has to thank God. Because after all, the point of the Hodah, the recognition, is that ultimately, behind everything which exists, we recognize that there is this divine being, this supreme being, who is the source of everything. And all the good that a person can have comes only because of the will of that source. That's the real idea of Hodaya. That's why a person has to give Hodaya. If a person is ill and he becomes healthy, he has to give Hodaya. It's the same idea. It's the recognition that everything God did is with tremendous wisdom, and he created us and he, in a physical way, and in such a way that even if we get sick, there's medicines and we can heal ourselves. It doesn't necessarily mean that God intervenes. That's the idea that a person brings with him from childhood, this magical relationship. And there's a problem with that, because the person is always looking to God to sort of free him from the world of nature. And he's trying to establish a dichotomy between God and nature. And to the extent that he moves in that direction, it's problematical, because if you're always looking to God to free you from nature, then you're basically, there's an implicit type of a criticism. There's something wrong with nature, there's something wrong with the reality. But that's the product of God. God saw everything he had created and was told, oh, it was very good. So, really, the the basis for our relationship to God and for our acknowledgement of God is the fact that we encounter God as the one who is responsible for the world of reality that we find ourselves in, and that we should regard as Tov. At the same time, we are, of course, things are extremely complex, and particular circumstances, we shouldn't regard that as evil, by the way, when things aren't going our way. That's a very an egocentric type of a thing. If things, you know, things work out in such a way, due to the forces of nature, so specifically may not be good for us, we shouldn't look at it as being an evil. But nevertheless, we also maintain that the God's providential relationship to the world is such that depending on the level of an individual and what he's striving after, so God will assist him. God will assist him. So we believe that everything that happens to a person can be accounted for either by reference to the laws of nature, how they work themselves out, or by reference to the Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. That's the basic synopsis of some of the points that we made. Now, what I was saying yesterday is that there really is no such thing as luck. What I mean to say is that people look at it as though some people, there is luck, that he's lucky, he's a lucky guy. One second, now, there's nothing wrong, we use that term, there's nothing wrong with the term itself, but there is a problem with the meaning that people give to it. If, on a certain level, if you think that this person has a certain type of a power or a certain place in the scheme, he's lucky. Things happen because of him. See, it's all unspoken. Nobody speaks these things out. But that's basically a certain sense that you get. I wish I was like him. He's got the luck. Now, whatever they say, he wins the lottery. Then you're saying you're attributing something to him, that he has a certain quality which invokes a certain type of vague result. If you spell it all out, so what do you mean by that? What are you really saying? How is he in any way different than you? Then you must, your premise, the premise behind this is that there's some type of a magical system out there, that not in accordance with what I described. That results happen to people not because of the system of nature which God has established, or the providential system, and we don't understand all the reasons behind it, the system of Chachma. I said too that the people are always troubled when some terrible event occurs. Someone gets ill, or a child is ill, and there's a tragedy. And then they always have a problem with God. And the problem that they have with God is, if you want to say it very bluntly, that we're premising a God who is all powerful. God is, there's nothing in the realm of this world. God is in complete control of his creation. So God has the power to, well, we read in the Torah, according to the Red Sea, God can do anything. And God is all known. So God is aware of the situation, and God has the power to stop it. And it's very difficult for people to accept the fact that, well, why didn't God intervene and stop it? Because it's obviously a tragedy from any angle that you look at it. Put a different way, the average person would say, well, if it was me, if I would love to help. Everybody offers to help. I wish I could cure. If I was a doctor, if I had the cure. The person who's dying of cancer, what doctor, if he had any inkling, if he had any kind of a cure, wouldn't rush to the scene to save the person? But certainly, if you ask the person, now let's say you had this kind of supernatural power. You had the ability to heal children or anybody that's suffering from a fatal disease. And you were aware of it. These two factors. You were aware of the situation and you had the power to do it. And not just the power, but sort of like in a Superman kind of way, just by, snapping your fingers, the person could be healed, so would you heal the person or not? Now, in our context, you have to realize, in our context, the failure to do that would be regarded as a terrible thing. Well, Samen al Dan Reyecha. It's a mitzvah. It's a low sase, negative. A command not to stand by the blood of your brother. So we condemn any individual who finds himself, encounters another Jew who's in danger, who's really dying, whether he's drowning in the sea, whether he's a victim of a crime, whatever the case may be, and you just stand out of your voice.
Yes. This presupposes, by the way, that you have the capacity, obviously. If a person's drowning and you don't know how to swim, so then you're not obligated to jump in the water. But you are obligated to try and get help, whatever you can do. If you can throw on the rope, or if you can call the police, or whatever. But the mitzvah of Los Amot is always relative to your capacity. That's important to know. I mean, obviously you're not held liable if there was nothing that you could do. But you are obligated to do whatever you can do. So clearly, we would we'll condemn a doctor that because of his laziness or negligence or he doesn't care enough, doesn't try hard enough. Very often you have that today. A lot of doctors don't put enough energy into the particular case. You go searching, then you discover there was a cure. Something could have been done. But certainly if a person has the knowledge and has the ability, and it wouldn't even cost them anything, and they just don't care, and they let the person die, we would say that's a terrible, terrible thing. We call it wicked. It's the problem of the Holocaust. This is clearly the problem of the Holocaust. That's unspeakable evil. I mean, there's no way. It's mind-boggling. And it's something that nobody would believe happened. Unless we had absolute proof, historical evidence, there's no way it can be denied. But prior to the Holocaust, if somebody wrote a novel along those lines describing what took place, I think people would just dismiss it. Too far removed from reality. Something which could never happen. And there too, the only reason why this is not a problem for us, it's an interesting kind of thing, and Mel made the point that this particular individual, up until this a certain point, was released. But when this event happened to this particular woman, that's what picked him off. But the question is, well, you were aware there's greater sufferings in the world that happened. Why this one? All right, that is true. That only shows you that most people relate to philosophical issues not because they're involved in the world of ideas, but only because they hit a certain emotion. So the Holocaust, which is an infinitely greater tragedy, is something which to him doesn't really create a religious problem, a crisis, simply because it didn't affect him personally. Okay. I don't want to say that would be a satisfying answer. Very often we tell a person that. So up until now, you didn't realize that tragedies occurred? Is that part of the reality of the situation, tragedy? All right, that is true, but that's not an answer, because the person can say, okay, so I'm not at such a high level, that I didn't feel the pain of the 6 million Jews because I had no connection to them. I should have, but nevertheless, it's not an answer. Now he's asking the question. The question, if a person is going to be honest and express all the thoughts that are connected to it, is simply, we believe in God. There is a being out there who is infinitely wise and powerful and good, and is aware of what's going on and has the power to stop it, and does not do so. So how can we deal with something like that? How can we understand something like that? And again, if this were a person, if there were any individual, in fact, that is a criticism, the bystander, so to speak. There's a lot of history books on that. Why didn't the other nations, why didn't the Jews in America and the free world, why didn't they do more? See, that's always an implicit question. That, all right, so there's a lot of controversy. Could they have done more? Did they do as much as they should have? However, the premise is that it can be established and demonstrated that there were people in a position to help and that they failed to do so, so that's a terrible evil. Those people will be branded as evil. The question then is, so to speak, why don't we apply the same standard? If we're going to believe in God. The answer, the mistake is that we cannot make that leap. We cannot project, and that's the mistake that people make, that the only thing they can see is the world of man. And then they project onto God all of the elements that make sense within the framework of man. When you're talking about God, Of course, we ascribe compassion, we ascribe justice, goodness, etc., to God. But that is not to say that we have anything approaching a full understanding of how God relates to his creation. And that
as he said, just like we see that the creation, in terms of the system, the laws of nature, are an expression of the infinite wisdom of HaKadosh. And therefore it is impossible, because of that, it is impossible for any individual to ever obtain a full understanding of reality. And any scientist, whether he's religious or not, will admit this. Any great scientist, the greater the scientist, the more humble he is, because he will realize how little he knows. And it's only a fool that thought he, because a fool doesn't know anything, so whatever, if he gains a little bit of understanding, he thinks he's a genius. But the true scientist realizes that it's a world of massive is not the word, endless wisdom. And, whatever he's getting is just scratching the surface. So therefore, you don't know. You can't explain. Now the question is, with regard to the other realm in which we obtain a relationship with God, that God relates to us not simply through the system of nature which he has created, but God relates to us through a providential system. And as I explained yesterday, it's not something which we have a right to demand. Because once God set up a system, and it's a perfect system in terms of the universal nature of it. I compared it to a person who set up at a university. That's the way I explain the idea, that if an individual set up a university and organized it in such a way that it would be perpetuated, so that the generations and generations would be able to come, the courses were worked out, and you could take. But it all depended upon utilizing your chachma. If the person came, he failed to anticipate, he didn't register, he came late, he didn't study, this and that, and therefore he failed, he didn't get the benefits. And so most people, then he'll start to criticize, oh, what a terrible school it is, it's not fair, why did this happen to me? We'd all see the absurdity of it. If this individual, a few hundred years ago, set up a system, he gave you tremendous opportunity, here are the rules that you have to live by, and if you follow these rules, and you utilize the system, you'll get the benefits. But if you, because of your own laziness, your own stupidity, or whatever emotions overcame you, your rebelliousness, you refuse to utilize the system properly, so then don't blame the system. I mean, in a sense, it's like a computer. It's all set up. It's allowed. You can, if you access it and operate in accordance with the rules, you'll get the results. It's not nuts. In a sense, we have to look at the universe that way. Of course, on a much grander scale, that's the idea of Birkas HaMazon. That we were not saying that God gave me this meal. We're saying that I'm enabled to fulfill my needs because God has set up a system, and that system is universal, in which everything has been worked out to the greatest degree of perfection. So if I tap into that system, if I restrain myself, all the ways of the Torah are the ways of perfection in terms of reality. Be modest, to restrain yourself, to develop your mind, you know, how to discipline yourself. If a person lives that kind of a life, it's the best kind of a life. Just on the basis of the fact that the world was designed for that kind of a life, without any special help from God. See, you don't even have a right, a person really doesn't even have a right to demand that God should specifically assist them, because what do you mean assist you? I go into the world. I created a world which is amenable to you, and I gave you the tools that you need. Here's the world. You see how man, you see that the system is can't be chaos, chance. How is it possible that the world out there, the very fact that the world out there corresponds to the laws of reality and logic and cause and effect and so forth, which somehow or other are embedded in the soul of man, and there's a certain harmony that exists between you and the environment that you live in, how did that come about? If everything was chaos, nothing should follow, there should be no patterns, and why should there be anything within you? The amazing thing that you discover is that there's no chaos at all, that everything has an explanation. Everything has a pattern. That's one thing. But that you are constructed in such a way that you can tap into that system, that you can gain an understanding of the system, and you can apply it to yourself, and you can train yourself, and look at the tremendous harmony that exists between man and the system. Civilization, development, that in the last few thousand years, people can fly from one place to another, technology and so on and so forth, all because man has something within him that enables him to tap into the secrets of the universe in which he lives. What, this happened all by accident? Now, in addition to that, however, we say that we have a relationship to God through a separate system, which is a providential relationship with God. Even though we really have no right to demand it, but such is the nature of God's connection to his creation, that he didn't just leave it on its own. What's wrong with that? What would have been wrong if God said, the individual that set up the university. I set up the university, you've got everything you need, you've got the brains, you've got the tools, a perfect system, now it's up to you, you have free will. If you use your seichel, if you operate correctly, you'll be successful. If you don't, you're on the pit. But if you fail, if things don't work out right, well, I'm not going to intervene and do anything more for you, because this is what I did. I related to you in a general, in a universalist, that you should be helped through the greatness of the universal system, not that you should be helped on a personal level. I'm going around helping to save each person in the world. Who's a great benefactor? Okay? The one who sets up a system so that everybody can benefit. Now, nevertheless, we maintain that God's relationship to his creation is such that he retains a providential connection to it, and that when in particular circumstances, because of the failings of man, not because of the failings of the system, because of the failings of man, because people are evil, because people abuse others, and therefore the righteous people will be brought to a state of suffering, there is that phenomenon of a providential relationship. There's a providential relationship in helping the world to achieve its goal. That's why God created the Jewish people. That's the whole purpose. Well, God related to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because they were great individuals who discovered the truth. And unfortunately, the rest of the world was in darkness. So, without the help of God, these truths would have been lost. Because in terms of the natural order, it's virtually impossible to pass them on, to set up a system that's going to be able to perpetuate the generation after generation after generation. So that's the providential system. And there's many elements of the providential system. But the point of this is that there are two ways we can relate to the providential system. We can relate to the providential system as a child would, that God is this great Superman, this great protector out there, and he projects, you see, he projects his own desires, that he's extremely important, and God is out there to protect him, and God should be there to help him and save him, and in a personal, childish kind of a way. If you look at the providential system in that way, then you're going to have these problems. You won't have these problems when somebody else dies, because that doesn't bother you that much, the one in his home. You see, because since it's based upon this emotion, this infantile emotion, it's always going to be personal. It's not going to be in the upstairs. The Holocaust won't bother you, but if your team loses the game, that's going to kill you. You see? Or something unfair. If you're treated unfairly, then you're going to get angry. That's one way. That's the way that most people relate to the providential system. It's a complete misunderstanding. It's the religious mentality at work. All people have this religious mentality in that they are looking for something out there that's going to treat them as they imagine, as they remember, the parent would treat the child. Unconditional love and the savior. That is where the notion of a savior comes into the picture. I need a personal savior. And you know what that means, a personal savior. That when I mess things up, whatever the case is, magically it turns out to be good. See? You go to sleep, you put a tooth under the pillow at night, you wake up in the morning and there's a dime there. That's basically the religion of most of the world. The answer I'm giving now, I'm not elucidating all of the elements. That's part of my answer, that it's impossible to do so. But the answer I'm giving is to an individual who has this problem so that he should not lose his faith. The other way of relating to this element of Hashgacha is the way of the truth of the Chachamim, it's the way of Moshe Rabbeinu. What did Moshe Rabbeinu request from God? Hara'eini na es derachecha, show me your ways. And what does Rashi say? He wanted to know Tzadik V'ra'lo Rosh HaVetovlo, which means to say he wants to understand God's ways in terms of the Hashgacha, how God relates to the world in a providential way, not in the through the medium of the natural order. But when God does intervene, and what determines the principles, when God does allow an event to occur, when God prevents an event from occurring, that element of Hashgacha Pratis, of God's intervention in the scheme of things. Now, from that question we see that Moshe Rabbeinu approached it differently. He realized it's not an area which can be grasped by the person's emotions. That's absurd. But just like under the creation, the natural order is an expression of the infinite Chachma of Hashem, so too the providential order is an expression of the infinite Chachma. It operates with tremendous Chachma, which is beyond man's comprehension. And just like a person can never understand the world of nature, so too he can never understand the history. There'll always be these gaps, so to speak, in history, because that too is a manifestation of a supreme chachma which we can't understand. So therefore, the question is invalid. You can't ask that question. You can ask that question of a person. A person, you have a responsibility, you have capacities, okay? So I understand what you have to do. And you were watching the child, and you saw the child fall, and you didn't intervene. I can ask that question, because I know what the rules are which govern your relationship to things. But I don't know the rules which govern God's relationship, because that's a completely different realm. We can't take God and put him in the courtroom with some people and put him on the stand and subject him, because you don't know God. Who are you? Man can be judged. Man has responsibilities. Man has to work on himself. Man has to perfect himself. God is. God is not subject to the laws that we live by. When we speak about God's goodness and God's compassion and so on and so forth, we don't mean to say that it expresses itself in the same way that our compassion is. We don't know what these words mean. It's a different type of, it's perfection. God is a being of infinite wisdom and perfection, and it's His will. His will determined that the world should exist. And His wisdom determined the manner in which the world, His will and His wisdom are one, of course. I don't mean to say He has different compartments. That's because of the unity of God. I'm just using it for descriptive purposes. But just saying, just like that's true, that a person can't make a demand, well, why is the world of nature work this way? Why is there bacteria, genes? Why do they have all these different things out there? Well, why did God make the world differently? Then a person would realize it's totally absurd. He accepts. Certain things he likes about the world of nature, certain things he may not like the world about the world. Why are they present? Why did God create alligators? No one ever had a problem with that. Yet there are accidents. Alligators will devour people, will every person will fall off a boat and will get beaten by an alligator. So you could ask yourself, why did God create, had God not created alligators? All the rivers would be safe. This is a person who asks the question. He realizes that it's absolutely absurd. Because all this is part of a vast scheme. You don't understand. You know that there's a tremendous scheme out there. There is a chachma out there, but you don't understand it. You accept it. Now, if that's the case, why is it different when it comes to the other arena of God's chachma in the Bria? And that is the arena of providence. We simply don't know what the rules are. And we certain things, the Rambam does talk about that, you know, in a general kind of a way. That's something that a person must study. And that's why, if you study the Torah, you study the Nevi'im, the Navi, books like Eov, all of these. The very fact that there's a book like Eov which describes the plight of an individual who finds himself in an unfortunate circumstance and he's struggling to find answers. Doesn't that show you that this is a very complicated area and that it doesn't work in accordance with our emotions? So therefore, that should never be a source. I can understand on an emotional level it's going to cause a person anguish, but it can never be a basis for giving up one's belief in God. Because one's belief in God has nothing to do with that. A person's belief in God should be on the basis of his understanding of the reality in which he finds himself. And therefore, if a person has a proper and appropriate belief in God, and he realizes what his task in life is, and that is to dedicate himself to getting closer and gaining a greater knowledge. A person has to have a sense of his own limitation, where he stands in the scheme of things, how small, and that he has an opportunity that God gave him to increase his knowledge. And that is the real good. So then, and that's the answer. On the emotional level, it's a problem, but it's like any other emotional problem. It's a law. A person accepts laws in life. I don't know that a person... If a person, there's certain laws the person can accept. If a person is rejected, a person's wife leaves him, or whatever the case may be, he's emotionally devastated. So he realizes that that's emotional devastation. Time heals all wounds, and eventually he'll get better, and he goes on with his life. It's not a cosmic situation. Of course, God could have prevented it, but he doesn't demand that. The same is true with regard to these types of tragedies. And that is that we don't know. The reason why we don't know, of course, everybody says, well, we don't understand. Of course we don't know, we don't understand. The reason we don't know, we don't understand is, I just want to add one thing. The subject says, when a person says we don't know, so it gives the impression that they're just arbitrary. That's what I'm saying may sound to you as nothing new. You've heard this many times before, you know. When you come from people, we don't know, we don't understand. Or sometimes what they try to do, because they can't accept this reality, what Ellie pointed out yesterday, is that people begin to posit all kinds of crazy explanations. Well, that is to say that since people can't tolerate that such a thing can occur, one of the things they do is to show that, no, everything negative really is for a positive, but you don't see the positive here. Yeah, that really is going to lead. And that people have put forward the absurd idea that that's the Holocaust. Since people can't tolerate that something happening, what was for them? Really, it was for a means to an end, so that we should have a state of Israel. Something along that line. I'm not saying that in a direct sense that this is really a good, but we don't see it yet. You just have to wait long enough and you'll see it. I'm not maintaining that. If you're going to say that the Holocaust, for example, was really a good, try and tell it to some of the victims. Because as a result of the Holocaust, the state of Israel was created. Let's assume that that is true. I mean, that it's true factually, that there's cause and effect, historically. It certainly may have been a factor, but I don't think it's that partial. Whatever. But where is the justice in that? How does that solve the problem? The people that benefit are the people that are living in the state of Israel. For them it's a good. But the people that suffered, what kind of good is it for them? How does that make it, excuse me, but it doesn't in any way... And besides, how is that, if a person is from the standpoint of justice and goodness, why did God have to bring about, if God wanted it to be a state of Israel, why did it have to come about that way? It doesn't make any sense to me. See, God is all powerful, and God intervenes and rearranges things in order to bring about a state, so why didn't God rearrange it in a way that it wouldn't? The only way was possible for the 6 million people dying. That's hard to imagine. I mean, God could have acted in a different way, different set of circumstances.
But now we'll say we don't know.
Yeah, you could say that you could say as follows, that it contributed to the creation of the state of Israel. Okay? And maybe once there was a Holocaust, God utilized it to bring that about. In the same way that the Rambam explains that even though Christianity is false and Islam is false, that God in his infinite wisdom can take something which is evil and utilize it to pave the way, so to speak, for the bringing about of the Mashiach. But that doesn't mean to say that justifies the phenomenon itself. That's after the fact. To say that God brought about a Holocaust for the sake of Israel, how does that answer the question, how does that solve the problem? Is that satisfying? That's just. Where's the justice? So now I feel good. Okay, now the Holocaust is not a problem. Just because you can show in the afterwards that some good. I mean, then if that's the case, anytime you murder somebody, you destroy a person, whatever, then he rebuilds his life and he goes on to something else. So you say, look, it wasn't so bad, it was good. That doesn't solve the problem. The point of it is that bad things happen. We maintain that man is created in such a way that he's resilient, and that he can absorb the bad, and that he can overcome, and he can bring out certain positives within him, and greater strength within him, but that doesn't mean that it's... what's good about it? You look at Yaakov. Yaakov didn't take that attitude. He lost his favorite son. He lost Yosef, and he said, he'll go down to the grave for him. Why didn't he have this philosophy? That one second, I'll just wait around long enough, and I'll find the good. Yeah, I'll find the good in it. There are certain things in life that are bad, that are painful. Now, of course, it's not an evil in the ultimate sense, because a person still has the ability to continue with his life and to pursue the good. But he is going to have to put up with some type of emotional pain. Sometimes he can get over it. Whatever. But I think the answer of answers, and I'm about before, Ellie also mentioned, that's why people have other explanations, like Gilgal. If a person goes through suffering or, dies in, or young, whatever the case is. So since they can't tolerate the idea that this can happen, so they're forced to come up with these absurd explanations that this person is really a gilgamesh, and they start to posit all these kind of things, which are absurdities. In my opinion, that this, I mean, you can call it a test. I'm not saying it's being done for a test, but after the fact, it is a test. This is a test of a person's emunah, his faithfulness to God, which means that your relationship to God, your belief in God, is based upon, that's what faithfulness is. It's based upon a unshakable foundation, and that you recognize that God is a being of infinite chachmah, and that you do not understand all the rules and regulations which pertain to the area of God's providence. So you have to give up this childish notion that God is like this big daddy who just comes in to save you and help you and do goodies for you. It doesn't work that way. How does it work? That's a system of infinite wisdom. Well, say, where were you? That's what God says. Where were you when I created the world? Who are you with your minuscule intelligence to try and make judgments about how I should relate to my creation? You're going into an area which you just don't know, and you're not equipped, and you're basing yourself on emotion. That person takes that route, so then he's finished. His whole emunah is gone. But what type of an emunah was it in the first place? That's the idea of Eeyore. As a result of his sufferings and tragedies, he was able to see that his whole root in emunah wasn't the correct one. It was not a correct one. It wasn't an incorrect basis. That's the ultimate moral of the story of Eeyore. That he realized that as a result of the process he went through and all these types of questions that he had, the ultimate realization was that the basis of his emunah was not correct. It was rooted in this type of an emotional attitude. And that's why when these things occurred, he was thrown into devastation. And that it leads the good for the individual is that it leads him to reconstruct an emunah which is based upon a firmness, which is based upon a different way of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If a person appreciates the chachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he partakes to a certain degree of Ahavas Hashem, so look, I'm not belittling it. Clearly, it doesn't mean everything's going to be rosy. It's not the case. It's not the reality. That's not the reality, and a person has to accept the fact. Kashem Shem Avarachim, just like you bless God on the good, so too you bless God on the bad. This is part of the scheme of the situation. You know that. You've read books. You see it all around you. So you know what happens to people. The fact that it doesn't bother you is because you're working on the childish notion. Yeah, them. God doesn't really care about them. God only cares about me. So it can't happen to me. But a wise person will accept the fact that this is part of the scheme of things, and in that scheme of things, there are going to be events that simply frustrate him in terms of his childish desire to have that protective relationship with God, and he has to seek to get beyond outside of that and to establish a different relationship with God. That's the story of Eeyore.